It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. It's presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Giants. I'm Paul Dottino. Here's Matt Sytek. We'll be here for the next hour, and we have a jam-packed show for you. I already promoted it on Twitter. We're going to talk about a bunch of NFL draft prospects. We're also going to squeeze in some talk about what the Giants coaching staff, Brian Daboll, and others discussed today as the offseason program has begun. It is underway. Guys are in the building. They're starting their strength and conditioning as the 2024 season really kicks off this morning. But first up, I don't want to waste any time, and we want to get right to our first guest of the morning. It's Matt Zimmer, who covers South Dakota State for the Argus Leader. And, you know, it's funny, Matt, I do FCS games, broadcast games here in the Northeast. So, you know, I have a real soft spot in my heart for FCS football. And, you know, the Dakotas, whether it's North Dakota State or South Dakota State, these guys must feed them some pretty good beef, because these folks always seem to send some players to National Football League camps. And I guess Isaiah Davis, the running back there with South Dakota State, is one of those guys who's leading the group this year.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's one of the best ones that's come through here in a while. He used to split time in the backfield with Pierre Strong Jr., who's now in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns, was drafted by the Patriots a couple years ago. The talent level in the Dakotas, the FCS in FCS football, has just been steadily going up the last few years. And like you mentioned, the Dakotas in particular seem to have kind of, I don't know, found a little bit of a secret sauce or what you want to say, but they continue to churn out talent that isn't just good enough to win them games at their level, but to, you know, translate to the NFL. And now I think there's 6, 7, 8 guys from South Dakota State in the NFL right now. There's even more than that from North Dakota State. The Missouri Valley Conference that they play in is kind of, you know, akin to the Big Ten or the SEC for their level. It's where all the best teams are, all the best players are. So there's a lot of talent, and Isaiah Davis has a chance to be as good as any of them. I mean, like I said, he split time with some other good players here, but when he was in there, won them a couple national championships, took them to a third one. And every time he was on that big stage, he played some of his best football. So he was incredibly fun to watch, and I'm really excited to see what kind of career he has in the NFL.
Sticking with Isaiah Davis, he obviously has great size for a running back, you know, 6 feet, 218 pounds, very physical. Do you envision him as more of an early down back in the NFL, or do you think he can develop into a three down player?
Good question. Actually, South Dakota State was the only team that wanted him to play running back coming out of high school. Everyone else was recruiting him to play linebacker, and he came here, and you can see why. You know, he's got a very physical style of running, very upright, very violent, gets behind his pads real well. He's not a burner. You know, I think his 40 time was like 4.56, 4.57, something like that. You know, so he's not going to wow you with that, and that'll probably knock him down the board a little bit. But everything they asked him to do, he did it. And like I said, in the biggest moments against their top competition, he usually played very well. He's a pretty good receiver. He's a pretty good blocker. But it's hard to say how that translates to the NFL because, again, you know, Pierre Strong, Zach Zenner, some of the other running backs that have come out of South Dakota State and gone on to the NFL, they've contributed. They've done well, but they haven't been able to prove so far anyway that they're able to be that guy who gets 250 carries in a season or can be the sort of featured back. Is Isaiah Davis the first one? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I couldn't say for sure. I think we're going to have to see where he ends up and what kind of situation he lands in.
You know, we just got done talking to the Giants' new special teams coordinator a few minutes ago in his media briefing, and we've heard since the combine that if there were going to be some kickoff rules changes, which we now know after the last couple of weeks there will be, that it may be very likely that running backs will be the guys best suited to return those kickoffs with the new rule. Now, our new coordinator just said it could be either speed guy or it can be a big, powerful, strong guy. Could be either one. He hasn't decided yet. Do you think Davis is one of those guys who may actually find a niche as a kickoff return guy?
He could. He did it quite a bit for SDSU, especially earlier in his career. I hated it. I was always screaming at the coaches, "What are you doing? He's one of your best players. Why are you putting him back on special teams and exposing him to injury?" But they did it, and they usually would put two guys back. He'd be one of them, and one of their speedier wide receivers or cornerbacks would usually be one of the other ones. I don't remember if he ever broke a long one. I don't know that he necessarily was awesome when he did it, but he has done it. And I can also tell you that whatever situation he ends up in, he'll do it. I mean, he's definitely one of those guys, and he's said it repeatedly over the last couple of weeks in this process. Whatever they need me to do, I'm willing to do it.
Yeah. So for someone with, you know, his great size and great ball security, he barely fumbled the ball while at South Dakota State. Why do you think he sometimes, you know, tries to bounce the run outside instead of just keeping it, you know, north-south? You know, I've read a lot of scouting reports that seem to have that as, like, one of his biggest weaknesses heading into the draft.
I think probably because he knows he has such a big mismatch if he does get on the outside. I don't know if you've seen mention of it, but his best weapon is a stiff arm. He's got an epic stiff arm that if you go back and watch clips of his first appearance in the national championship game his freshman year, that was the spring COVID season. I mean, he's literally just throwing guys to the ground, pushing people around. When he gets out in the open field, he knows at the second level those guys can't tackle him. Now, that's one reason I can see why that's a concern at the NFL level, because is he going to be able to throw around NFL defensive backs the same way he was FCS defensive backs? I think that's a valid question. So it'll be interesting to see if that's able to still kind of remain in his tackle box at the NFL the same way that it was at South Dakota State.
All right. Now, one of the other things we know about the Dakota programs is that they usually churn out some pretty decent linemen. You got two out there. I'm going to start with one, Garrett Greenfield, the offensive tackle. I'll let Matt worry about the guard. What do you see in Greenfield that you think will translate as he steps up and makes that very large jump to the NFL?
Yeah, he's got the size. He's incredibly smart, really athletic. He had the highest vertical leap of any of the offensive linemen at the combine.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got some experience, too. His first couple of years, he started on the right side. They moved him over to the left side for his last year or two, and he barely ever got beat. I mean, I'm sure he gave up a sack somewhere, but I don't remember it, and I saw all their games. At that level, the FCS level, a 6'7", 320-pound tackle with the strength and athleticism that he had, he's going to dominate. You know, the talent level isn't quite what it is there as it is in the Big Ten or the SEC. So I think that's the big question that Garrett has to answer. It's one thing to move up to the NFL and be an interior guy, to be that bookend left tackle or even right tackle. That's a little bit more. So I think probably if there's any reason that Garrett's a little lower on most draft boards than Mason McCormick, the guard, it's just because of that reason. Like, you know, can we trust an FCS guy to put him out kind of on an island like that against, you know, the elite NFL pass rushers? I wouldn't put it past Garrett to be able to do it because, like I said, he's got the size, he's got the athleticism. I think he has the strength. I know he had a little bit of an injury situation the last couple weeks that prevented him from participating in the bench at the combine. But I think, is he ready to step in and be a starting tackle in the NFL? No. He's going to need a year or two, I think, to acclimate himself, figure out the league, and get even bigger and stronger. But I think he can have an NFL career, and I think eventually he can be a starting tackle in the league.
Yeah, so you kind of touched on what I was about to ask about Mason McCormick. So he's insanely athletic, as we saw at the Combine. According to Next Gen Stats, he had the number one athleticism score in Indianapolis among all the guards there. And you combine that with his production at South Dakota State. I mean, he allowed, according to PFF, 2 sacks over the last 3 seasons total. So do you think that his mid-round projection is sort of what you were just talking about with Garrett, simply because he's coming from a school like South Dakota State? Because it seems like he should be ranked and projected to go a lot higher in the draft.
I think South Dakota State is still battling a little bit of the FCS perception, and they probably always will. You know, I mean, it's not the highest level of football. Now, one thing I've said to counter people who have wondered about that is, look at the guys who are in the NFL from South Dakota State.
Right.
You know, Dallas Goedert was drafted early. He's had success. the running backs I mentioned. Christian Roseboom was an undrafted linebacker who's now starting for the Rams. There's lots of guys in the league that when they've got that opportunity, they've proven they can play. Tucker Kraft last year was drafted by the Packers, had a great rookie year. So I think you'd like to think at some point they've kind of earned the trust, so to speak. Having said that, you know, Mason is an interior guy. He can play center. He can play both guard positions. That certainly helped the versatility that he's shown. You mentioned the athleticism. The big thing, I think, with Mason is just he's got that exact personality you want in an interior lineman. You always hear people talk about a guy having a mean streak or, you know, being a nasty guy in the trenches, and that's what Mason is. I mean, he was usually good for one 15-yard penalty every game, and we always said, joke that, well, he got his one. You know, as long as he got one per game, he felt good about it. It was when he got two that it became a problem. But, I mean, he was a guy who pushed people around. After he drove a guy into the ground, he'd give him an extra shove before the play was over. I mean, he's just that kind of guy. And which is funny because off the field, he's the nicest guy in the whole world. Like, just, you know, you interview him and, like, this is the same guy? You know, what's the deal here? But I talked to him just a couple days ago, and I was really struck by how confident and calm he is in this process. You know, you'd think a kid from South Dakota who was only on a 50% scholarship when he came to college, now being talked about being a second, third-round NFL draft pick, that he'd be, you know, nervous or wigging out. He was going to have a meeting with the Chargers, I think, this week. And he was just like, hey, I'm having fun with this. How many kids get a chance to do what I'm doing right now? Wherever I end up, I'm cool. I'm just excited for it. I think he's ready for this. I think whatever team gets him, no matter where they get him, is going to be really happy with him.
All right, so ultimately, with the athleticism and the versatility of both of these linemen, will the biggest adjustment be the speed of the game, or do you think it'll be the strength and power of the game as they get up to this level?
I think probably all of the above. I mean, you know, like I said, the FCS level, the top-end talent at the FCS level is higher than it's ever been. But the overall talent level in the FCS level is maybe not as great as it's been, because you're seeing so many great teams in the FCS are moving up to FBS now. You know, all these great teams that used to be competing with the Dakotas, they're not there anymore. So I think that's another legitimate thing that kind of leads to some of the skepticism. I don't think it's that a lot of these scouts or agents or whatever are looking at these guys and saying, well, I don't think you can play. I think they're just going, how do we know? You know, yeah, you only gave up one sack in 13 games, but, you know, you were playing Western Illinois, you were playing Eastern Kentucky, you know, some of these teams that aren't as good as the powerhouses that you see. So we'll see. I mean, I do know this. In the off season, both McCormick and Greenfield went to a online offensive lineman boot camp sort of thing that was run by a guy named Alex Boone.
Yeah, a lot of guys do, and it's a good idea.
Yeah, Alex Boone played for the Vikings for a while. He might have played for the Giants, if I think of it.
He didn't, but he helped teach JMS, John Michael Schmitz, our center. He was one of the guys that he went to
school
with.
Okay, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Then. Yeah. And when they went out there, they were kind of skeptical or nervous, I should say, about, well, geez, how are we going to fit in with these, you know, Power 5 school dudes? And they came away from it feeling great about it. And I talked to Alex Boone about it. I said, how did these guys stack up? And he said they were as good as anybody there. You know, they could have stepped in on a Big Ten offensive line and been starters and been productive. So I think they've proven it. But like I said, I think there will always be a little bit of a stigma to FCS that they're going to have to battle for a while.
I got another one about McCormick for you. What do you see his ceiling at the next level? And how big of an immediate impact do you think he can have as a rookie?
I think he might be able to contribute right away as a rookie. I don't think he'll necessarily have to be a practice squad guy or a guy who never gets in there. I don't think he'll probably – I'd be surprised, let's put it that way, if he was a starter as a rookie. But his versatility, you know, like I said, he's been working out at both guard and center positions at all of his workouts that he's been doing. But early in his career at South Dakota State, he played tackle as well. So he's played all five positions before. Like I said, he's really confident. He's athletic. Very physical kind of guy. I don't think he's going to, you know, be intimidated or whatever. I think he's going to come in ready to do whatever, and I think he'll be able to help a team early in his career. As far as his ceiling, I mean, it's been 20, 30 years ago almost now. The Jacks had a offensive lineman when they were in Division II named Adam Timmerman, who I think was drafted in the sixth or seventh round and ended up playing 15 years in the league and making a couple Pro Bowls. I think that shows that it can be done. I would guess that most people who saw both of them play would say that Mason McCormick's better than Adam Timmerman. So if that's a little bit of a a blueprint, I think he could have a long career, be a starter, and potentially a Pro Bowl guy down the road.
All right, Matt, we got about a minute or so left. I'm going to ask you about one other guy who intrigues me on this team, Zach Hines, the tight end. They're listing him here at 6'6", almost 265 pounds. He's one of those slobber knocker guys, okay? I mean, he's going to knock the living hell out of you. He's a blocker. He's not interested in the pass game. At least I don't see him being a passing, catching tight end at all. But if there's a team that just wants that extra beefy body who's going to hit somebody in the nose and block for their running back, he's the guy. What? Give me a good story about him. There's got to be something that's going to make us chuckle.
Well, it's funny you say that because they used him more as a receiving tight end than a blocking
really?
Tight end. Yeah, he was a basketball guy in high school. Didn't start playing football until really late in his career. I want to say like maybe his sophomore year in high school. And then when he started playing football, he played wide receiver. And you can imagine what a 6'6 wide receiver looked like in South Dakota
high
school football.
Yeah, these measurables don't add up to wide receiver. They don't.
He's just they played to his basketball skills. You know, he very much a red zone threat. Didn't use him as much over the middle. You know, that was more where he did his blocking stuff. Because obviously with Isaiah Davis, Pierre Strong in that backfield behind him all those times, he was called on to block quite a bit. But the biggest thing they used him for was as a red zone weapon.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of how they envision him, what his pro career could be. I don't know that he's a every down NFL tight end, a starting tight end, but I think he's got that kind of hybrid of skills where, like you said, he's got the size. I think he could stand to become more physical, and that might be part of the reason they used him as much as a receiver as they did. But the ball skills that he has as a basketball guy, jump ball, red zone, 50-50 balls, that was certainly his strength. And I think he can bring that and some blocking and physicality to a team would make him a great second or third tight end.
See, that's the danger of only getting cut-ups to watch, because I saw some of Isaiah Davis's runs, and I saw a tight end throwing some pretty good blocks for him. But obviously, obviously, he's got other skills to bring to the table. Hey, we appreciate it so much. Matt Zimmer, covering South Dakota State for the Argus Leader. Matt, where can people read more of your work and find out more about these prospects?
I'm actually no longer with the Argus Leader. I am now at Sioux Falls Live, where you can find my stuff at SiouxFallsLive.com.
Okay, so that's two mistakes already this morning I've made.
That's okay.
Matt, thank you so much for your time. Be well.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Again, this is why cut-ups can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Because you get the cut-ups, you see it, and you're like, okay, fine. I recognize that guy. I got to keep an eye on him. Turns out he should have had his own cut-up reel. But he didn't, at least not one that I got. Pearson, are we ready for number two?
I'll dial up.
All right, we're going to dial up number two. We're going to talk about Tulane in just a moment. In the meantime, we did hear from Brian Daboll very quickly. Daniel Jones continues rehab, going very well. He does meetings. He does all of his work that he's got to do with the trainers. Things are progressing day to day. They look for improvement every day from him. Also, no update on Darren Waller at all. Zero. He had nothing to share with us. So that kind of brings you up to date on the most important news transaction-wise, unless there was something I missed.
Transaction-wise, no. But Dave's also just mentioned that he was very happy with the turnout for the off-season program today, because keep in mind, it is optional. No one has to be here. But as Dave said, it was a very good turnout. He's happy. And yeah.
Okay, very good. We go to our next guest, and we're just going to keep moving really, really quickly here because we got so much going on today. Jeff Duncan covers Tulane as a columnist for the Times-Picayune. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. And, you know, I don't know if I should go to the higher prospect first and Jaquan Jackson, the wide receiver, or the quarterback, because the quarterback is always the magnet of everybody's conversation. So, you know what? I'm going to start with Michael Pratt. Why don't we do that first up? And let me ask you, Jeff, Pratt doesn't get a lot of attention because he's not perceived to be one of the top six, the quarterbacks who seem to be on top of the castle, and then everybody else is in that second bag, so to speak. But what are your thoughts on some of what he will do when he gets to the NFL level? Is he someone who projects strictly as a backup, or do you think his ceiling is a lot higher than that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of NFL evaluators are probably asking that same question in their war rooms. this week. And I'm a big believer in Pratt. You know, I saw him lift this Tulane football program to unprecedented heights. You know, I don't care what level you're at, you don't win 23 games in 2 years without doing something right and without at the quarterback position. He lifted the Tulane program to another level, you know, winning the Cotton Bowl against Caleb Williams and Southern Cal, I think speaks volumes to his ability as a quarterback. But also, I think with Pratt, he's always been kind of overlooked. I mean, he was homeschooled in Florida, and I think that's a big reason why Tulane was able to land him. Now, he played some high school ball before that, but he really wasn't on the radar screen and ended up at Tulane and was an immediate starter as a freshman, and that just doesn't happen at any level mm-hmm. of Division One very often. So he's the kind of guy that I think once he gets into the right system and gets some NFL coaching, has a real chance, I think, to develop into a starting player if he gets in the right offense.
Yeah, sticking on Pratt, I know he missed a couple of games this past season with a knee injury. I just wanted to get your opinion. How do you think that injury affected his performance once he got back onto the field?
Yeah, he wasn't quite the same player. I mean, he's not particularly, he's not a runner or scrambler per se, but he's athletic enough to move the chains, get you that first down on third down if needed. But the strength of Michael Pratt is his intangibles. I mean, he just has really strong leadership skills, and if you ask any of his teammates or coaches at Tulane, they just swear by the guy. I mean, up and down the lineup, defense, offense. And, you know, covering Drew Brees here for as long as I have, I place a high premium on that quality. I mean, obviously you have to be able to play, and Pratt has proven that. He's the leading passer in the history of Tulane football. They've had a lot of really good quarterbacks that have gone on to the NFL level that he surpassed. But I think it's those intangibles, the intelligence, the traits that I think are required at the NFL level that are what going to separate him once he gets into an NFL locker room and I think give him a chance to become a starter.
Jeff, in the cut-ups that I saw of him, I wrote down, I thought I liked his mechanics and his touch and also his accuracy. These are all things that pro scouts and pro coaches are going to really, really like. But then I also wrote down maybe average arm strength, which is something that people are going to knock him for. And obviously the athleticism, you know, everybody today gets all foaming at the mouth over these incredible athletes who are playing the position. You're not going to see him, you know, put up any of those combine numbers like we saw some of those other quarterbacks do. Is that the bias that he's got to work against as he tries to get more notoriety going into this draft?
Yeah, I think that's a good scouting report on Pratt. I mean, he's not particularly – he doesn't really have that one redeeming quality that jumps off the film, but he's above average in just about everything. And I think he's mobile and athletic enough to get around in the pocket. I mean, you know, we saw the Giants this year when they came here. Their offensive system was built around the athleticism of the quarterbacks. I mean, Daniel Jones, of course, is not what you would consider to be an elite athlete, but I saw him here run all over the field against the Saints a few years ago. I think Pratt is the kind of guy that's going to be mobile and athletic enough at the NFL level to buy the time mm-hmm. and to feel the pressure, the pressure in the pocket, which is probably more important than anything. You're always going to have to win from the pocket, though, as an NFL quarterback. That's the basis of it, and he's proven that time and again at Tulane.
Man, I'm an old school guy, Jeff, so I love what you're saying. It's music to my ears. I tell people there's a big difference between escapability and mobility. And he's got the escapability, and to me, that's a much more important trait.
Yeah, look, Drew Brees was a great example of it. I mean, he was an elite foot athlete who could move in a phone booth, avoid the rush in the pocket, had an innate feel for it, but he was not the kind of guy that was going to run 50 yards downfield. But that's rare, you know, and I think having that ability, and I think more than anything, the instincts to see it or the acumen to see the pressure and get into the right play is so important, at the NFL level. And Pratt has all those traits.
Yeah, so Paul touched on this a little earlier. He mentioned the wide receiver from Tulane, Jaquan Jackson. Do you think he'd be a good fit in the NFL as a potential kick returner? A hot topic this offseason has been the new kickoff rules. So given his size and speed, do you think that would be a good role for him at
He'll
the next level?
He'll certainly be a slot guy. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, you guys, you got him pegged. I mean, he's a terrific return guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world. That would be my concern with Jaquan. He battled injuries a lot here over the year, but when he is healthy, I mean, he is electric with the ball in his hands. And I think with the way the change in the kickoffs, I mean, he's going to have a role, I think, at the NFL level. He reminds me in some ways of Darnell Mooney, who came out of Tulane years earlier, was kind of overlooked in the draft and has had a terrific career with the Bears. Now he's in Atlanta, a guy that had great speed, game-breaking ability, but just didn't get on the radar screen at the highest level when he got to the NFL. I think Jaquan has that potential if he can stay healthy.
Do you have a dark horse who you think, not just a practice squad guy necessarily, but someone who you think from the team who might make a 53 that we haven't talked about as one of the top two?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, there's a corner they have named Jarius Monroe, who's just a terrific player, but he can't run a lick. I mean, I think he ran a 4.6 40 here at his pro day. But the guy, he reminds me so much, guys, of Ryan Clark. I covered Ryan Clark when he was at LSU. Ryan Clark also.
He came in with the Giants. I remember Ryan when he was here.
Undrafted free agent.
Yep.
What, he played 12 years in the NFL? I think.
He's only here for a cup of coffee, I think 2 years, and then he was gone.
Well, yeah, but he played with the Steelers for a number of years.
Washington and Pittsburgh. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes, and I think Jarius is that kind of player. I think he'll make the transition to safety. He's smart. He's competitive. He played at a high level here. This is a guy, watch and see, guy. He's going to get in a camp. He probably won't get drafted. He will make a team, whether it's the practice squad, and he'll play in this league for several years. Too many people get caught up in the 40 times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This guy knows how to play, and he's played at, a very high level for this team, and just reminds me so much of Ryan Clark. Someone's going to be glad they got him on the roster.
I'm glad you brought up Jarius. He's actually the other player that I had jotted down a couple questions about. But I read an interview from a couple months ago with Jarius where he talked about being a great communicator on the field. Did you see that while he was at Tulane? And do you think this, leads to him exhibiting some leadership qualities while out on the field?
100%. I mean, he's bright. I mean, you don't become a team captain the way he did and go to Tulane and graduate the way he has without being bright. But he also, I think, is just a tremendous leader. He's very mature. He's just one of those guys. Look, you all covered the NFL a long time. I mean, some guys get it, right? I mean, he just gets it. He's going to know where his role is with the team. He's going to do everything asked of him from the coaching staff. I'll be shocked if he doesn't make it to the NFL at some level. He's got to get the right fit and a team that believes in him. But an undrafted free agent, which he's probably going to be, that's the advantage of that, because you can kind of find the right team, the team that really wants you and has a vision for you.
Great stuff. Jeff Duncan covers Tulane as a columnist for the Times-Picayune. Jeff, where can folks read more of your work and more about these prospects?
Yeah, we've got our draft previews all week on NOLA.com, and I'm on social media at @JeffDuncan_. You can find our work. We're getting excited like everybody else for the draft in a couple weeks.
Jeff, appreciate your time so much. Stay well. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
That is probably the most optimistic and most positive review I've heard of Michael Pratt. This is a guy now who saw him every day during his career and has a better microscope than any of the other folks that I've talked to before. They seem to think that he's probably a solid backup. I get the impression from Jeff, there's maybe a chance there he might be a little bit more. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I wish he hadn't gotten injured this past season, because when he did play the 11 games he was on the field, he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And the season before, he was great at Tulane. So, had he not been injured, had he not missed those games and taken a little bit of time once he did get back on the field to, fully get back to himself, I wonder if people would be looking at him in a whole different light in terms of this upcoming draft. But
I think after those top six quarterbacks, you got that valley.
Yeah.
And then for me, there's Spencer Rattler, and Pratt's right underneath him. Now, Pratt is 6'3". He's much taller frame, more prototype, you know, NFL player than Rattler, who's only about 6 feet tall. You know, Rattler's more of a Baker Mayfield type. He's going to be one of those guys, more athletic too. Heck of an arm. But Pratt has some things going for him, obviously, the intangibles, as we just talked about. May give him a chance. And, you know, in terms of he's one of those guys, he is a project. He's not a prospect. There's a difference now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get to that level, you get to that fourth round maybe, you know. And then there's the other guy, the third guy, but I put him at the bottom, is the guy who's really raw. That's Joe Milton from Tennessee.
That's what I was just about
to
ask you.
Who has a howitzer for an arm. Howitzer. But he's probably going to need 2 years of being redshirted in the NFL before he's ready to even get on a field.
I was literally just about to ask you if you had a choice between, you know, Michael Pratt maybe in the fourth round or Joe Milton in the fifth round. Which would you prefer?
Look, the Giants don't need a quarterback anyway. But if they were going to take one, it's going to be a developmental. I don't think they're drafting a quarterback. But if they do, it's a developmental guy, which means the Rattlers and the Pratts and the Miltons. You know, those are the guys you're probably thinking about later on in the draft on the third day. Again, if they even take one, and I don't think that they're going to.
While we're on the topic, I just want to say Daniel Jones is speaking to the media right now.
Yes.
We're missing it. He did say his neck is 100% healthy.
Very good. Not that I had any doubt.
I know.
We go to Western Michigan, where radio play-by-play guy Robin Hook is on the line. And Robin, appreciate your time certainly today. And he's not on the line. I'm sorry, Pearson. I saw the red light blinking.
I called him. He said 110.
Okay. We're going to move that down just a little bit. All right. Not a problem. You know what, Pearson? This is known as talking across the wall and through to the audience.
You want me to try the Toledo
guy? Why did you try the Toledo guy? We were going to try to do Western Michigan at 1 and Toledo at 110. Apologize to Jack if we get him early, but if he can go up now, we'll go knock him out right away, and then we'll get Robin Hook. Jack Mohort, former NFL offensive lineman with the Colts, is now the radio analyst with Toledo. And we were hoping to try to get him for 110, but maybe, just maybe, we'll get him right here up at 1 o'clock. All right, is there anything else Daniel Jones just told the media?
I'm looking at some tweets. He said he fortunately has not had any setbacks during the rehab for the torn ACL. He insists the neck is not a concern. It was just a stinger, he said, and that he's throwing the ball, and his goal, he hopes to get on the field at some point during the spring workouts in some capacity, and perhaps most importantly, he expects to be fully cleared for the start of training camp.
Yeah, for sure.
So that would be big.
You know, I think all systems are a go with Daniel Jones, and that is outstanding news, no question about it. Looks like I'm getting the thumbs up there from Pearson, so we're going to go to check in on Toledo. And that means Jack Mohort, former NFL offensive lineman, now the radio analyst for the club. And, Jack, appreciate the time, and thank you so much for joining us today. And you have, coming out of that program, a surefire first-round pick, probably even the top half of the first round, in Quinyon Mitchell, a corner who, depending upon somebody's rankings, is either the number one or two corners in this class. What do you like about him, and how will it translate to the league?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first and foremost, guys. I appreciate any opportunity to jump on and talk football. So talking Quinyon Mitchell, I mean, this is a guy that, from the first game of the season, to me, just looked like an NFL cornerback. You know, I had the opportunity to share a locker room with some really good secondary players in my time in the NFL. And the skill set that I saw from Quinyon early on in this season just screamed to me that this is a guy who's going to be playing on Sundays and be very productive for an NFL ball club. And, you know, some of those traits I saw early was, you know, obviously his athleticism. We know what he ran at the combine. He's, you know, extremely fast. He's got great hips. He played against some really good competition. You know, Toledo in the MAC doesn't play great competition week in and week out, but in the marquee games, he was a guy that never shied away from competing with the best wide receivers on the field, and I really appreciated that from him. He wasn't a guy that said, "Hey, I'm gonna stay over here and I'm gonna hide a little bit because I want my film to look really good." He was a guy that competed against every good wideout that he matched up with, and you know, just intangible stuff in the college game that's changed so much in the last decade, even since I was in school. You know, guys are mercenaries now, and you know, they can, you know, listen to the hype and read their own press clippings and jump ship whenever they please. This is a guy who you know, felt a sense of responsibility to the Toledo Rockets and Coach Jason Candle, who came and found him in Florida, and he stuck around, and he was a great leader on this team, showed a great sense of loyalty. He was never a guy that showed up in the newspaper for anything negative. He was a leader, led mostly by example, not a real loud rah-rah guy. He was just a guy that handled his business and showed up on Saturdays and was very, very productive. And, you know, that's something, as a guy who doesn't play the position and doesn't quite know, you know, I don't know all the nuances of playing cornerback, but, you know, a guy that handles his business like that as an offensive lineman, you really respect that from the other side of the football.
Yeah, so when you're looking at Mitchell, you know, he really has excellent size, speed, toughness. I mean, he put up great numbers at Toledo the last couple seasons. Do you think that it is, you know, the fact that he wasn't asked a ton to play press coverage, maybe as much as some of the other top cornerback prospects, do you think that is like the main reason why he might not be consensus considered the top corner in this draft? Or is there another aspect of his game that might be pulling him down just a little bit compared to the other guys?
No, and that's the, you know, that's always going to be the rub, right? Is he played in a system where he wasn't asked to play a ton of press coverage. You know, he played within the confines and the framework of the Toledo defense, and within that system, you know, he wasn't always playing press coverage. I think maybe, you know, talking to scouts up in the press box, you know, I would go down and ask guys, who do you like? What do you see? And I would always ask about Quinion, and that mm-hmm. was always the thing. It was like, you know, we don't have a ton of film of him playing up on the line of scrimmage. So I think those were concerns. If there were concerns, I think those were the questions that the scouts had to ask. But yeah, I think going to the combine and running through those drills and seeing the fluidity of his hips and proving his athleticism really did a lot for him. And, you know, the other thing about Quinion, you know, especially in college, I think sometimes you don't see cornerbacks that are very physical. And Quinion's a guy that was never scared to come up in the box, help and run support, mm-hmm. Was physical at the line of scrimmage when he had to be. And again, as an offensive lineman, to see, you know, we call them the rats in the secondary. Guys sometimes shy away from contact. To see him come up and help and run support, you got to be able to tackle in the NFL, right, as a secondary player. And he showed that. His film showed that. So I think if there was, you know, a hang up or a question that scouts had, it was certainly that he didn't play a ton of press coverage. But I think, you know, now that we've seen him at the combine and, you know, at pro day working out, those are questions that you can get answered just by watching a guy move. Maybe not necessarily in live action, but if you can see that athleticism in person, like the scouts have been able to do the last few months, you can address those concerns, check those boxes, and feel really good about getting a guy who's going to be a great producer at the next level.
How quickly you think he'll challenge for a starting job, Jack? When you draft a guy that high in the first round, the implication is that, well, he's going to probably challenge quick. But can he do it right out of the box? Do you think that, you know, some of the other corners we've seen drafted the last 5 or 6 years high in the first round, they've had to play right away? Is he that close to being pro-ready, or is he going to need some seasoning?
Well, I think that's a great question as well. And in the NFL, I know it to be very well timing and opportunity, right? If he steps into a situation where there's a need in the secondary, obviously, you know, he's going to be forced into action very quickly. But, you know, I think coming from a school like Toledo, you know, you have your Alabamas and your Ohio States where you're playing against top guys
sure.
week in and week out. You know, I think it could benefit him a lot to be a rotational guy early, get in a quarterback room of, you know, veterans and guys that can show him, you know, how to play the game at a high level. There's so much. The change from college and mid-major college to the NFL is, you know, it's speed, and it's those little things that you learn from the veterans. So I think at any position, there could be a great benefit from not being forced into action early and, you know, being able to learn from some veteran players. But that being said, you know, he's a guy, that maturity I mentioned earlier, the way he handles his business, I do believe if he is asked to step up from the first game of the season, he won't have a problem doing that. And I think he's going to be a guy that wins over his coaching staff and his teammates very early in stepping into a locker room. So I think that if he can get in there and have a great off-season program, mini camp, training camp, he's going to be ready by week one. I don't think there's going to be an issue with him if he needs to be pressed into action week one, filling that role and being productive in doing so.
Jack, we got about a minute left for this segment. Is there anyone else on Toledo that you think has a chance to crack a 53-man roster this summer?
Yeah, you know, I thought Toledo, again, like every mid-major program, has had some players leave the program, but Toledo had a guy named Penny Boone who took off, who was a really good running back, had some ball security issues. I believe he's coming back for another year of college, but I think he could be a Sunday-type player at the running back position, was productive catching the ball in the screen game. Maxon Hook was a safety for Toledo, sat out of the bowl game, but he's another guy talking to scouts that they really like. He is a strong safety, was very good in run support, was a little bit of a ball hawk in big situations. He'd come up with an interception. So those are three guys. Every time I got in the booth, I'd have my eyes on them because I knew they were game changers. Game wreckers is what we call them from their positions. So a lot of talented guys. The problem is just keeping these guys within the program when they are so good. You want to make sure they stay in the walls of your organization. But some really good players.
Yeah, that transfer portal's a real ugly deal.
Yeah, Jack, I agree with you.
I'm with you. Jack Muhart from Toledo's radio booth, analyst on the football games and former NFL lineman with the Colts. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the offseason.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate you.
Be well.
Thank you.
All right. And now, Pearson says, we are indeed ready to talk to Robin Hook, the play-by-play man on radio for Western Michigan. And Robin, so great for you to join us today. We appreciate your time very much. There is a defensive lineman, or edge player, if you will, who's catching a lot of interest. We talked about him at the Combine, and as we get into the draft, Marshawn Kneeland, at 6'3", 267 pounds, seems to be attracting enough of interest that someone's going to be very glad to get him in the draft. Tell us, if you can, what you like about his game and what you think he's going to have to polish up.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Marshawn Kneeland is an outstanding edge rusher. That's where he made a name for himself at Western Michigan. He had a really good defensive line pretty much throughout his career. In particular, a guy like Braden Fisk, who played his first four seasons at Western Michigan before landing at Florida State last year. His name is blowing up right now, too. And those two guys were together. We had those two guys together on the defensive line for Western Michigan, along with another guy named Andre Carter, who finished up his career in Indiana last year. All three of those guys are going to get drafted. And Marshawn in particular has a tremendous motor. He's got a great desire to get to the quarterback. And all you got to do is put on one game tape to see that. Eastern Michigan, the last season, Marshawn Kneeland had a career day. 11 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, and a forced fumble. He was a one-man wrecking crew in that game and pretty much single-handedly kept Eastern Michigan at bay, and the Broncos won a big ball game thanks to his play that day. But he had a tremendous career at Western Michigan. You know, he could have come back, but the interest in him professionally was too great to turn down.
Yes, so Marshawn Kneeland, incredibly athletic. He registered the highest athleticism score of any edge defender in Indianapolis at the Combine this year. And he also performed, you know, very well down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. So between now and, let's say, the start of training camp at the end of July, how can he best improve his game to help prepare himself for, you know, the level of play in the NFL?
Well, I think he's going to want to work on his game against the run. He's been primarily an edge rusher, trying to get to the passer. And I guess you can specialize that in the National Football League. But if you want to be a four-down D lineman, you got to be able to stop the run. I would think that would be an area that he would want to work on. But as far as getting to the passer, that's what Marshawn Nealon hung his hat on, and tackles for loss, getting into that backfield. And what he brings to the table is really, really good. And some National Football League team is going to be happy they get Marshawn Nealon somewhere, you know, in the second or third round maybe.
A lot of power in that player. I also wrote down, I thought he was very steady and consistent. How do you see him being employed? More down or more standing up? And do you think he'll be better off in a 4-3 or a 3-4?
I think he's tailor-made for a 4-3 defense. That's what Western Michigan played, predominantly four-down linemen. He would was not a stand-up rusher. He had his hand down, all four guys. But the other thing about Marshawn that they did later in his career, pretty much almost exclusively last year, where they would move him around. So he would line up on one side of the line and duck in and out, and then some of the defensive schemes that Lou Esposito ran — he's now at Michigan as their D-line coach, by the way — some of Lou's schemes were to try to free up Marshawn Nealon and get him away from those double teams, because you can't block him with one guy. Eastern Michigan tried to do it, and he just bull rushed over the tackle and just annihilated quarterbacks.
I saw those clips for sure. You have a corner out there. Is it Kenai? I did not see any tape on him, but I saw him listed. Is it Kenai or Kenai Lovely?
It's pronounced Kenai Lovely.
Kenai Lovely.
And I'm not sure where that capital H at the end comes from.
Okay. All I've read on him, because I'm doing the research for our show, I read about him, but I did not see any video on him, is that apparently he's blazing fast at 5'10", 182.
He's a little bit undersized, but he's always around the football, you guys. Kenai Lovely is going to have a chance to make somebody's team, even if he's not drafted, because he's just a ball hawk, and wherever the ball is, he seems to be around it. So had a lot of key interceptions for Western Michigan, not the biggest cat, and suffered some injuries earlier in his career, but when healthy in his junior and senior season at Western Michigan, he was dynamic in the secondary.
I just have one last one about going back to Marshawn Nealon. So I know he played tight end in high school. He played the tight end position along with the defensive line, and I know he was also a regional champion in the track 400 meter run. How do you think that, you know, experience from high school playing tight end and the track helps him with his just overall game as an edge rusher now?
Well, he even had a rushing touchdown last year for Western Michigan as they lined him up in the backfield and actually gave him the football. So he's not unaccustomed to having the football in his hands as he played tight end and got that carry for a touchdown. And he's batted a lot of balls down in the backfield, but he's just a really good athlete. And he's got a quick start off the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's really fast and powerful hands. You know, getting the quarterback, you got to have strong hands. You got to be able to move those offensive linemen out of the way so you can get to the quarterback. And he's got a variety of moves that can help him free up to get into the backfield, spin moves and up and unders, and he's got them all in his bag of tricks. He's gonna have a nice career in the National Football League.
Yeah, he is not a finesse player, Robin. He's going to come after you with some pop, that's for sure. Appreciate
Absolutely.
The time. Robin Hook, the play-by-play man for Western Michigan football. Again, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate the insight. Stay well.
Thanks, guys.
So we went through South Dakota State, Tulane, Toledo, and Western Michigan. We still have a few more schools to go. We got a few more days we're going to be doing it this week. But in the meantime, we have about 10 minutes left on the show. If you'd like to try to get in at 201-939-4513, we will try to take a couple of phone calls. If you can squeeze us in, we'll try to squeeze you in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Matt, was there anything else from the press conferences today, by the way, whether it be Daniel Jones or one of the other players. The pressers for the players was going on as we were doing the show.
Yeah.
We got to hear the head coach and the coordinators earlier today, came in here, and then the players went on the press briefings as our show began, but we had guests to get to, and so I don't believe any news is likely to have come out of the player media availabilities, but is there something there you see?
No, there's no, like, you know, actual breaking news. I mean, there definitely were some interesting things, I would say, from Daniel Jones's press conference. We touched on the injury stuff before.
Right.
It seems like one of the reporters straight up asked him if he believes he's the best starting quarterback option for the Giants in 2024. And he said, yes, I do. I mean, I don't know what else anyone would expect him to say in response to that
question. That's a brilliant question, don't you think?
And I believe Bobby Okereke is either speaking at the moment or just wrapped up speaking. Again, nothing groundbreaking. Talked about Brian Burns having him as a teammate now, what the defensive front could look like with that addition. But, yeah, it doesn't seem anything breaking.
I'll give you a couple things from Shane Bowen, the new defensive coordinator. Says he's expecting big things from the front seven, has some big-time players there, has high standards for that group. Key elements for his defense: defend the deep part of the field, play man-to-man coverage, and be able to tackle. I think a lot of coaches probably feel that way, but that's what Coach Bowen said, and there's nothing wrong with that for sure. I certainly didn't want him to say missed tackles, right? interesting comments also from, Coach Mike Kafka, who has now gotten the promotion, right? He's not just offensive coordinator anymore.
Assistant
head coach now, which is really cool. Mike was asked about the quarterbacks and what do you want to see in quarterbacks? And I thought this was a very interesting question because they were saying, you know, you've seen all these prospects. And he said, yeah, I did. I talked to all of them. I graded all of them. I gave the stuff to the GM, to Joe, and to Coach Brian Daboll. But then they asked him, okay, well, what is it that you're looking for in quarterbacks? He did say this quarterback class, all a little different, likes them, says they're really sharp with a lot of ability, mentally sharp. That was what he was talking about. But then he said here, this was really cool. What are you looking for? He goes, I'm looking for leadership, ability to control the room, and to control the huddle. He goes, how do they tick? What makes them tick? And what are the issues that cause them a problem so that you can plan around it? He said, you want him to make the other guys better. But we already have that in the quarterback room with Jones, with Locke, and with DeVito. Those are guys you want to be around. I thought that was a very interesting and telling remark. Just saying.
No, I'm with you. One other part to add to that is he said he looks for the it factor. I know tends to be a popular phrase when talking about quarterbacks, you know, especially in the lead up to the draft, mm-hmm. which guys have that it factor or not. But yeah, it was interesting and good to see that, you know, even despite being asked clearly about quarterback, you know, prospects in the draft, that he brought it back to Daniel and to Drew and to Tommy, the three quarterbacks that are currently on the roster. And you can tell that he's excited to work with those guys. It's for real. He is excited to get in the quarterback room with those guys and work with them in the lead up to the season.
Special teams coordinator Gobriel, who comes over from the Jets, where he was an assistant special teams coordinator, he was asked about the new kickoff return rule and the new kickoff returner, whoever that's going to be, because it's a new role now given the new formations that we're going to see in the league. He said, those guys are usually the, quote, the baddest dudes back there, the most dangerous guys with the ball in their hands. He says your scheme has to feature those guys. However they do it, whether it's speed, physicality, doesn't matter, that guy back there has to be dangerous. And that's apparent because the league is going to force you to try to return those kicks now. So you better have something going for you.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the front office sort of prepared for that by bringing in a couple of guys this offseason that are at the very least are going to compete for that kick returning spot and, you know, fit the mold of what a lot of coaches are going around saying they are looking for the kick returner position. I mean, Isaiah McKenzie, yes, he's obviously had some success as a wide receiver, but he's fully in the running to, you know, take over that as the kick returner. Dante Miller, the running back that was just brought in
Little Turbo
a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, he's clearly going to be in the fold, in the mix for that kick returner spot. The one thing that I guess stood out to me the most with Michael Gobriel, which this is only the second time we've really heard him speak, and the first time was in that driving interview with Sean O'Hara that was released last week. But between
that Cadillac was gorgeous, by the way.
Between that interview and his press conference today, and I know this might be to sound a little silly because you expect the coaches, your coaches on the NFL coaching staff, to know inside and out the rule book, everything there is, but you could tell when Gobriel speaks and when he's asked about like the new kickoff rules, he gets genuinely excited when he's talking about it. You don't see from every coach around the NFL, but you could tell that he saw these new rules as somewhat of a new challenge, and that genuinely excited him. And he could not wait to, you know, just get right into it and start tackling all the different options that they could do in terms of the kick returner and just everything. And I don't know, that's just one thing that stood out to me. This is obviously his first time as a coordinator. He was promoted or hired from the Jets, where he was an assistant special teams coordinator. So that was, for me, that was just something cool to see and stood out.
Coach Brian Daboll did say one thing. I don't remember during his ownership meetings, media avail, if he talked at all about Singletary, the new running back. I don't think that he did.
I think it was just a very short quote. It was at the end
of... He talked more about him today.
Yeah.
And in addressing Singletary, he said he's been a durable player. Well, you know, you got to be, all right? I'm not saying anything, just that you got to be at running back. Smart, a pro, has quickness and vision, consistent production, happy we have him, good leadership traits, and a good piece to add to the offense. Obviously knows him from his days in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, he as you mentioned, as Dave's mentioned, first of all, just incredibly durable. The guy over the last, I believe it's 4 years, I don't think he's missed a game, or he's missed maybe one game in 4 seasons. And at the running back position, that is very impressive. His yards per carry average for his entire career is a great number. It's mid fours. I mean, he's averaged over 4 yards a carry every single season he's been in the NFL. This past year with the Texans, it was actually the biggest workload he's gotten in his young NFL career. And I believe it was around 200 carries, give or take. I was genuinely very excited when I heard the news that they were bringing Singletary in. Obviously, he's not Saquon Barkley. You can't expect him to just immediately step in and, you know, fill those shoes 100%. They're completely different players. But I think he's going to be a very, very solid contributor to the offense this year. I think, I mean, as we saw with all of the offseason moves, just about, it was clear, especially after last season, that Joe Shane and the whole front office was prioritizing guys that can stay on the field. I mean, the motto for this, you know, the Joe Shane, Brian Daboll regime, smart, tough, dependable. Last year, that dependable part, you know, there were a lot of guys all over the roster that just got hurt and missed some time.
Well, that word got blurry.
Yeah, so it was clear that when they were going into the strategies for this offseason and how to attack all the different roster holes, it was abundantly clear that they were putting a lot more into the dependable part and make sure they have guys that they can depend on throughout this upcoming season.
The track record of durability was much higher with the guys that they brought in.
Yes.
I think that's really ultimately what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
And the one other item that I thought was a bit interesting, too, because it does relate to the injury situation, Graham Gano, remember, who had that scope last year on his knee. You know, he's been around doing rehab stuff, but we really never talk about him, which is kind of crazy because the guy's an all-pro caliber kicker, and, you know, he's making a good buck, and the Giants clearly want him back. They re-signed him last year. They did his deal, got an extension with him. Coach Gabriel said flat out, can't wait to work with Gano with his years of experience, and Jamie Gillen, who had a career year as a punter last season. There did not seem to be any implied question about Gano's availability. We've seen him doing his rehab here during the offseason. He's around the facility a lot. I don't sense there's any reason to worry about him.
No. I mean, he clearly last year was, you know, playing through a little something. before going on IR. I mean, the first two seasons he was here, he was Mr. Reliable. And, you know, last year with that injury, it clearly was affected him. And, you know, he ended up missing half the season. He needed surgery and whatever. But once he returns to full health, there's zero reason to have any sort of concern.
They'll about probably bring a kicker in for training camp. I can't imagine they're going to want to overwork him during
the summer. Exactly. That's just to lighten his workload a little
bit. Matt, that'll do it for today's show. Remember, folks, the Giants Huddle is up on all your favorite podcast platforms. You get all your feature interviews over there. You can listen to the archive of Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, of course, today we had Tulane, Western Michigan, Toledo, and South Dakota State, which we reviewed going into the NFL draft. We'll have another school tomorrow. Hopefully you got an opportunity to at least review some of the stuff that you'll see coming off the press conferences today. I'm sure that Michael Eisen and Dan Salamone are on yourself too. You're going to be writing something or no?
I believe Dan is taking the lead on writing today.
Okay. Stuff, your transcripts and all your written accounts of the pressers earlier today, whether it be the coaching staff or the players, that's all going to be up there on Giants.com, which is your source for everything New York Giants. For Matt Sitek, I'm Paul Dottino. Remember, we're here, Big Blue Kickoff Live, 12:30 p.m. till 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday. We'll see you next time.